Now, did you get involved with the KUOM? Okay, what? How did you get involved with that?
You had to go on audition, especially for the what I was talking about, the Radio Guild, and hopefully pass. But they were people who are already in the Guild. There were a certain number of the people who have been there for a while who would pass judgment on whether you could get in or not.
Now, what is a Guild?
It was just kind of the name of the group that you get into, mm-hmm. that you can do these shows.
So, in other words, was there a professor that was in charge of these individuals?
No, it was the students themselves and KUOM people.
So it was a big clique.
Well, yeah, but you had, the person in charge of KUOM who was not at the university. And people like that as well.
Did you have to know somebody to get into the Guild?
No, you just take the audition and hope for the best.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, you know, KUOM used to share 770 with WCAL here in Northfield.
That's right.
From the St. Olaf campus.
770.
And of course, when WCAL was given permission when it was owned by St. Olaf College to move their tower site up to Rosemount, the trade was... That was the U of M's land, mm-hmm. and so they gave them 770, 100% of the day, and gave up their AM signal to get a 100,000-watt FM tall tower in Rosemount. Pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we all know Bill Kling
took
away our radio station. Yeah. But that I've had on the air for quite a while, so we won't even talk about that. But was this a happy time in your life in regards to coming from the plains of Winthrop to the dinky town traffic with streetcars and buses and cars? And
well, it was, but, you know, my brother, having been there the year before, he kind of led me. It was just wonderful. It just fell into place. I felt at home there as I did at home. It was just great.
How would you judge yourself? Were you a serious, studious student, or were you just a hellraiser, intelligent guy that was catching as catch can when he went to class and just excelled in the broadcast theater?
All of those things except the intelligent deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were having fun.
I was having fun.
Okay.
And I'm a C student at the best, I think, because you got so involved. If you majored in theater at the U, at least back then, each quarter you had to be in a play, and you had to be on a crew, whether it was makeup or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and that you had your classes as well. Now, to be in a show, you'd try out for the main shows. If you didn't that, then you'd do like the senior recitals. They would be students who were going to be... they were going to be drama at high school,
mm-hmm.
you know, teaching drama at high school or something.
Sure.
And they would be have a show, and you got to be in one of them.
Okay. And you had to audition.
You had to audition. You had to do that. There's practice night after night after night. You talk about ball players, you know, how they got to practice. We just all the time hardly had time to study. I mean, I know some pretty brilliant people there. They had a hard time getting it all together. But that's the way it was.
No, did you go to General College first?
No, okay. No. That would have been an option if my grades were even worse.
Yeah, okay.
I just barely made it.
Now, do you remember the first audition and for what role it was and what you ultimately ended up getting?
I think it was a show. Gosh, I can't remember the very first one. But I know it wasn't the next one, because then I played Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, and I played Sir Toby Belch.
Sir Toby Belch? What was that?
These were the comedy characters. You know,
okay.
Typical Shakespeare. He'd have a drama, mm-hmm. but then he'd have the low comedy mm-hmm. for relief for the audience from the drama. And so these low characters, and so Sir Toby Belch was one of them. Big, heavy guy.
In burping. I mean, did you have to burp?
That was my first thing on stage.
Can you still force a burp? Okay.
Except you had to have a long one.
Yeah.
So that the audience, you made that entrance, Sir Toby Belch. And then he had a wench on one knee and then somebody else on the other knee and a big cup of something to drink. And Sir Toby, I loved it. It was wonderful. And had to put on the beard and put on all this padding and everything.
And what about radio, first radio show? On KUOM?
Yeah, I really can't remember which one was the first, but it would be like a bit part in one of those Saturday shows they had. They had all these things during the week for in-school listening, and then they had a drama on the weekend. And each one would come up with an idea, either write a show or do one and get approval to do it. And it was just such great training.
Now, did you work in the sound effects department ever?
No.
Oh, did you marvel at those guys?
Oh, sure.
I mean, you take a guy like Tim Russell.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, he's the only person you know that can do what he's doing. Yeah. Maybe there's somebody else with him, but back in the era that you were in the 40s, late 40s, early 50s, sound effects were a very important part of broadcasting.
Yeah.
And things could sound real. Well,
that's right.
What was that commercial? Cue the maraschino cherries. Alan Freed, I think it was, that did that where he dropped the cherries on the marshmallows that were on the ocean.
Yeah.
Theater of the mind, in other words. Now, did the Army interrupt your career at the university?
No. As a matter of fact, I got to tell you just a little bit about
Please.
On second thought, I won't.
Why not?
Okay. One of the hardest things to learn, and what most people who have never been through it don't get when they do a drama on radio or on mic like this, was mic technique. If you were coming in to the room, here's somebody talking like this, and you got to be off mic. Hey, how you doing? Other guys, fine, come on in here. Okay. Oh, you're looking pretty darn good today. You know, like you're walking on, that kind of thing. And all that, this with several actors at these different mics. Because that told you where they are, who's coming in, who's going out. Well, I'll see you. Boy, I hope we have a better time next time. That part, some people just kind of never got. But once you get it, it's automatic. You don't have to think about it. You just do it.
And, of course, everybody knows how to make the sound of fire.
With a cigarette?
The cellophane from a cigarette package.
Do you have any handy?
No, I don't. I don't think they have. Well, I don't know if they do or not. We do have to take another break, though. It's 15 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio. You're listening to The Wayne Eddy Affair. On 1080 on your AM dial, or you can pick us up anywhere in the world, except maybe Roger wouldn't be welcome somewhere in China, although I'm sure you broadcast from there at one point in your life.
Actually, we did.
See how knowledgeable I am? And we invite you to go to KYMN Radio, all one word, KYMNRadio.net, and you can listen anywhere in the world. And that includes the IDS Tower, downtown Minneapolis. 14 minutes before 11 o'clock, 13 minutes before 11 o'clock on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota. Roger Erickson is my guest here this morning. Roger Erickson, of course, from WCCO, The Good Neighbor, 830. Excuse me, CBS. And my first guest, as I mentioned to you before, Roger, was your partner, Charlie Boone, of many, many years. He came down, and that's when I did 1 hour with each person. And I realized how interesting anybody
is. Yeah, until now.
With today's exception, folks. So you're going to have to come back because we haven't even gotten I know that... there are a couple of people in the other office there, Scott and Tim and Jeff and Terry. They want to hear about your radio career, and we'll have to get to that later on. But right now, we've got you at the University of Minnesota in the theater department and broadcast department, KUOM. And did you get to go all 4 years and get a degree, or did you get a job?
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
Okay, now you said your first car was when you were in college or when you went to Stillwater?
Stillwater.
Okay. So when you graduated, did your mom and dad have an opportunity to come up and see their son graduate from the University of Minnesota?
Yep.
And that must have been a big thrill for them.
Well, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about the rest of the family? Did your brothers Cliff and Dick and Kurt and your sister Meredy come up and say, hey?
You know, they were busy in their new occupation, school photography, I think.
Okay.
I don't remember them being there.
All right. And who was the commencement speaker?
I don't know, but I'll tell you one time. I was sitting next to somebody at something. I'm 82 again. I've forgotten.
Okay. But when you were...
I had it right in the tip of my tongue.
Okay. We'll get your
don't you hate that?
Happens to me all the time.
Oh, it does not.
I do. I pause and I go, what am I even thinking about? You know, I forgot what I was trying to remember.
Oh, Bill Clinton's wife.
Okay. Hillary.
Hillary.
You sat next to her at your graduation?
Well, this was at another affair there, but I was up on stage with her and had a conversation with her while she's waiting for, she's going to speak.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And was she the president's wife at the time?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
And,
but it was very interesting.
What color pantsuit was she wearing?
I don't know, but we were in the men's locker room waiting to go on, to get up on stage, and I had quite a nice little conversation with her.
What was the occasion?
It was a graduation, and they had asked me to come over there for some reason. I can't remember what it was.
Okay. Well, was it a when you graduated, was it like just the theater section, or was it the...
This was out on the...
Memorial Field?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you ever go to the ball games over there?
Oh, all the time.
Were you a big Gopher fan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What years did you go there? Late 40s, early 50s?
Started in 47, 48.
Okay.
47.
So you got out around 51, 52?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So America was just growing like crazy after the Second World War.
Yeah.
Korean War came in. And is that where they tried to pick you up after you got out of college?
Mm-hmm.
And then you joined the Army, the Ranger Division?
Well, I didn't join it. They came to me.
Oh, we had the draft at that time.
Yeah.
And then you chose to go into the Ranger training?
No, it's just that they had come back and they were training us. But it was Ranger training, but I don't know if we were going to become a Ranger. I think they took the really good guys out and they would be a Ranger.
Yeah, well, that's a tough job.
Oh, it really is.
And so,
and, you know, by this time I was 25.
Yeah.
And all the others coming in just out of
18,
high school,
yeah.
18 years old,
yeah.
And trying to keep up with them was a little tough. And I had allowed myself to get a little heavier, when eating well for a change.
Uh-huh.
When I was,
did it pull you away from a job, or was it right out of school?
No. I was working at WAVN and Stillwater.
Okay. And you know what? You talk about trying to remember names. And I'm sitting here ever since I saw you earlier this morning at the quarterback club. I'm trying to remember. Salmon, right? Oh, was that it?
The which?
Who owned WAVN when you were there?
Oh.
This is the Stillwater radio station.
Yeah.
And then...
The first ones...
Anyhow, that's, and then I'm trying to remember who owned it. I think he was your last boss at WAVN,
mm-hmm.
And then he became a banker. He sold it, but he sold it to the wrong people, and it went down the tubes, and then it got sold again. And
yeah, I haven't followed it that closely.
Okay, I can't remember. But anyhow, you injured your leg. How did you do that in the Army?
I just stumbled down a bunch of rocks.
In where?
In training in
Washington?
In Washington, Fort Lewis.
Fort Lewis, okay.
Yeah.
So, and you were tied up with that injury for another year?
Another year.
Laying in bed suffering?
Well, I had, terrible, this infection was awful. I had a terrible high temperature.
Uh-huh.
One time I was there, and remember they used to do a game of the week in football on the network. And I can remember who the guy was who did the play-by-play. But one of those well-known radio broadcast guys in sports.
Okay.
And it was the University of Minnesota, and it was Paul Giel and playing Michigan.
Oh.
And we won. And not too often did you win from Michigan. Paul Giel ran wild. So I'm lying there, and we have the radio on the air, and they come in to take, the temperature every 4 hours, whatever it is. They come in to take the temperature, and I got a temperature of 104.
Wow.
What's happened to you? And it's always kind of high. And they couldn't figure out why, you know. And then they figured out, I'm listening to this program, I'm getting so excited that my temperature went up.
Wow. Now, that had to be right about 1952.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, when Paul Giel was up
there. Yeah.
I remember as a kid in Indianapolis, we loved to play football, and I was Paul Giel, and Mr. George Noble, my buddy, was Paul Horning.
Oh, yeah.
The Golden Boy.
Yeah.
Boy, bring back memories, huh?
Oh, it does.
So when you get out of the Army, are you able to walk? I mean, how's your leg today?
Oh, fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where was the sore?
The right femur, the upper part of your right leg.
Okay. So
that single bone there.
Where there's not a lot of meat under it? It's not the calf. It's the front.
Yeah. Not back then. By the time I got out of there, I was as thin as I'd ever been.
Yeah.
But and, it was good.
Was it painful?
Yeah.
And did
most of the time, you just had this terrible temperature.
Okay, where
from the infection?
What hospital were you in?
Madigan Army Hospital.
Okay.
Well, I got to tell you about Madigan Army Hospital.
Will you please?
Got a guy in a bed, right next to me, or a couple of, not too far, and one day he said, Erickson. Yeah. You were in radio? Yeah. Yes. You know, I wanted to be in radio. I did some acting in New York. He was a New Yorker. Oh, yeah. So they got this in this radio right here in the hospital. So they had an in-house radio playing music because this was a huge thing, Madigan Army Hospital. Thousands, I don't know how many patients, most of them coming from Korea. And he says, you know, I think we could do a radio show. Well, let's talk about it. So he came over. So the big thing at that time was dum-da-dum-dum.
Dragnet.
This is the city. I work here. I'm a cop. My name is Friday. Yeah. So we decided to do one of those.
Okay.
So I get in my wheelchair, and he and I go over to the radio station with their quarters there. Say, we got an idea for you. We can do a Dragnet sometime. So they listened to it. Hey, that's great. You do that. So we did it. This is the city. I work here. I'm a doctor. I work at Madigan Army Hospital. I come to the first patient. And I ask my sidekick to look at him. How you feeling? Well, I'm okay, except, I got this leg shot up. And then I got the shot over here. And I've been bleeding a lot here. Oh, give him 2 aspirin. Now, that's a gag for all of those there.
Yeah.
They always figured they weren't getting enough attention. And they loved it.
So did you do it once a week?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did it after that.
And was this guy a true New Yorker?
Yeah, he's a real New Yorker.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah.
Talked like a New Yorker.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Man, that must have been helped the boredom, I suppose, and tedium of being in the hospital and uncomfortable.
Yeah. And then I started doing some at that in-hospital station, too. Went around and interviewed about their experiences. These guys,
wow,
knowing that it's only going to be heard in the hospital, laid it all out there. They told, some really gory details, Yeah, and then this, and then they said they got a shot over here,
Korean veterans, most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they loved it. And they could talk openly about their officers or anything.
Oh, boy. That's something.
It was a wonderful experience.
Now, it's a couple of minutes before 11 o'clock, and you can tell you're a radio guy because I see you looking at the clock, too.
I look at the clock all the time.
I know.
At home. Yeah. You do that too?
Yeah.
You always do.
All the time.
And do you have your clock set exactly to the second?
No. My clock set about 4 minutes fast, so when I'm 2 minutes late, I'm 2 minutes early.
I got to have it on the nose.
No, I'm fine with a fast clock. I use my cell phone for the exact time. But I am a type of guy, though, that when somebody says 9 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock, not 9:05,
Yeah.
So hopefully you can come back and we can start get you out of the hospital.
I can tell you about how Charlie and I went to that previous royal wedding.
No, okay. The Diana?
The joint. Yeah.
You were at that wedding?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy.
And broadcasting.
They had a budget back then, didn't they?
Yeah. And I could tell you about how the time I ended up in the ladies' room at the Hyde Park Hotel and broadcast from there.
And other stories, too. And the China Great Wall, you broadcast from there?
Yes.
And I think you interviewed Walter Mondale in Japan?
Yes. Actually, Charlie went over for that one.
Okay.
I didn't. I had a...
Okay. And, well, what in the minute or so we have left, can I get a commitment from you to come down again sometime?
You know, I'd be happy, especially if I can go to that same restaurant for pancakes.
The Quarterback Club.
Yeah.
All right. I'll even buy.
What? Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll flip.
Okay, that's even. Yeah. They'll flip the pancakes. We'll flip for the money. But I know a lot of people listening probably are going to be real interested in your career at WCCO and all the various personalities you got to work with, including Steve Cannon,
that's right.
Bill Deal, Jurgen Nash, Franklin Hobbs, and many others. Can I ask you one question?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the CCO of today compared to the CCO of the 60s, 70s, 80s?
Well, you know, I think they're doing really great with their news, the way they're handling it. And Dave Lee is just
he's
fantastic.
Superb. Yeah.
And I was happy that I kind of broke him in when he first came.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy with what they're doing. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.